It's episode two in 2023 of the From the Clubhouse podcast. We're back again, Steve. We can't get enough of it, can we?
We love it. That's the thing, isn't it? We love it.
And this week's massive, isn't it? Because, well, I'm going to Orlando tomorrow, so that's massive for me. Have I told you what I'm doing there yet?
Just once or twice.
I'm playing golf at Sawgrass at the weekend. We're having the weekend at Sawgrass. And then there's golf every day. Golf on Monday, golf on Tuesday, golf on Friday. In fact, a week tomorrow, we're playing at Lake Nona with Chris Paisley. Do you know who that is?
I do know who Chris Paisley is. You weren't the best person, really, to have on Are We Being Priced Out of the Top 100 Courses last week, were you?
No, probably not. So this week, we're going to talk about some seismic changes to worldwide handicapping.
News. Breaking news.
It's massive, isn't it? I haven't got any golf to talk about of my own, qualifying or otherwise. Have you played golf?
I did. I went up to Close House.
Did you?
In Newcastle and played the Philly course, which I have a deep emotional attachment to because it was the Newcastle University golf course, and that's where I did my degree.
Was it now? Are you still a country member there?
No. Right. No. This is quite painful. I'd love to still be a country member there, but I just don't get up there enough to justify it. So I've still got friends who live in Heddon and the area, and so I try and get up when I can. I was there on Sunday, and despite the unbelievable downpours, it was in very good condition. The greens were very fine.
What was the occasion?
There was no special occasion. I've always been a grab keys, will travel when it comes to golf. I'm very happy to drive 4 or 5 hours for a round of golf.
So it's just a game of golf?
Yeah.
Right. I don't know how you've managed to do that. Do you know what I did on Sunday? Right. No, it didn't. Well, sort of. I had a hangover. I got up and went to referee an under-8s football match. My little boy got player of the week. Then I came back to my house for about 10 minutes, ate a bacon sandwich, and then I took both my kids for a golf lesson. Then I went for lunch with my wife, my kids, and my parents. And then I went to watch Matilda in Wetherby Cinema.
You had spent all the Saturday, though, hadn't you, at Man United, Man City, or whatever it was?
That was definitely fits under childcare, though, so I took my son with me. No?
Well, yeah. I suppose you're the half got a break, so.
Meanwhile, you've just swanned off to like somewhere 3 hours from your house to go and play golf for no particular reason.
An hour and 40.
It's amazing.
I don't play a lot of golf these days, as you know, so no. I can get away with it.
That is incredible. Right, and was that qualifying for your handicap or not qualifying for your handicap, or what was it?
No, there was no general player scores in sight. I think I've said this on the podcast. I know, and people who enjoy WHS are about to take aim at me, so apologies for ruining your days. But I have no truck with general player score. Just don't really like it. I've no enthusiasm for it. No. I understand it. I think if I went to another golf course, like a bucket list golf course, and I wanted to put a round in for handicap, then yeah, I would absolutely get into the general play spirit. But January, around my course, general play, no thanks.
Right. Well, I think we'll definitely come back to that. There's something I've been wanting to call you out on, though, I'm afraid. You said last week that you are better than 11.
Stand by those comments.
How many cards have you submitted in the last 12 months, would you say?
I think it's exactly 20.
So would you not say, therefore, that 11 is quite an accurate reflection of your current golfing standard?
An accurate reflection of my form. it's not an accurate reflection of my potential.
Okay. And when would you say that form lapses over into potential? What sort of time frame are we looking at for that?
Essentially, as soon as I start playing better again.
Okay. So let's get into the meat and potatoes, shall we, of today.
Big news this week.
And it is big news, isn't it? So the reason we're doing this is the topic is that Steve has written a piece for National Club Golfer website about some changes that England Golf have made to the entry criteria, shall we say, for elite amateur events. And it's a specific list of elite amateur events. And it relates to the qualifying, I guess, of entrance handicaps and a kind of a rigorous check on the validity of the scores that have been submitted and what the portion of general play scores are versus those in competitive rounds as we would all understand them. And Steve picked this up and he's spoken to James Crampton, who's the championship director at England Golf. So we have the detail and I think an understanding of the provenance of the change. And we've spoken to the person who's responsible for the change. What you don't know, obviously, when you write this stuff, Steve, is how many people are going to be interested in it. And the answer on this case is a lot of people are interested in it. So it's clear that lots of you are triggered, for want of a better word, by WHS, by its rollout across golf, and perhaps some of the differences from the current system and from Congu, and some of the teething problems that clubs, event organisers and golfers are experiencing with the system. So we're kind of going to use this change by England Golf as an entry point into probably a broader discussion about WHS. But we do want to kind of try and drill down on that particular change to begin with. So I think if we do this in a few steps, Steve, can you start by explaining to us specifically what England Golf have changed?
Yeah, so they've got a new championship policy. It's a pilot for this year, and it'll apply to, as you said, a select number of events that tend to be oversubscribed. So English amateur, for example, women's amateur. When one of those competitions has too many entries, players who have more than four general play scores in their most recent 20 will now be assessed to look at the difference between their competition score differential and the general play differential. Where they find a differential of more than two strokes, the player will be told that their entry into the championship has been denied. This could also apply to entrants who have an incomplete handicap record. So that's, you don't have a total of 20 scores in your record, and they could find their entries also refused if there's evidence to suggest that their handicap index is different to their current playing ability. So all of this is in England Golf's pilot championship policy for 2023. It's publicly available. You can find it on their website. So there's no secrets here. There's no, they're very open about it. But I went to obviously James Crampton, as you said, who's a director of championships at England Golf, and basically asked him about it. Why are you doing this? And what he said, you can read this on the website, but I'll just paraphrase it. But obviously pre-World Handicap System, Cat 1 players, as they were, couldn't put in supplementary scores. You couldn't basically have a general play score if you were low handicap. You can do that now, obviously, on the WHS. And James said that what they found was a number of occasions last year where players were gaining entry into some of their major championships who had handicaps that he says were quite clearly based on their ability to return general play scores rather than competition scores. And he said, he quoted some examples of that where in some cases the difference was 6 to 8 shots. So they've brought in this policy essentially to try and, but be careful how I put this, but to shore up the integrity of their competitions, basically. I think, that's the general point, isn't it?
So the word you're kind of avoiding using is cheating, isn't it? And I think you're sort of right to avoid using it because, say again?
very carefully avoiding that word, Tom.
Yeah, and I think you're right to avoid it because it's almost like reverse cheating, isn't it? But we'll come back to that in a minute.
I do think there's a very clear, I think James describes this in the piece, so it's worth sort of telling listeners who may not have seen the piece how he describes it, because I think that'll give people a clear indication of why this has been brought in. So he says the intention of this pilot scheme is to highlight that we are aware of some players' misuse of the WHS and the returning of general play scores to lower their handicap to a level that is not reflective of their ability under competition play conditions. This is about the integrity of the WHS system and ensuring the high standard of entrance into our championships is retained. So it's a bit, there's a few words to listen to there, but I think it does accurately distill England Golf's position on it.
Yeah, okay. So let's sort of begin at the beginning. So what you're describing, let me just play sort of layman for the minute. What you're describing is a sort of nuance change that's affecting some elite competitions. So 0.001% of the golfing population. So what's the big fuss about? Why are people interested? Don't get it.
It's WHS for a start, and everybody's interested in WHS, but I'm being a bit facetious there. You obviously know why everyone's interested in it as much as I do, because they're equating it with what they believe to happen at club level, which is the opposite. You know, people think there's obviously this indication at elite level that some players may be attempting to lower their handicaps using general player scores in order to enter elite competitions. And obviously at clubs, people think the opposite, don't they? That people are using general player scores to raise their handicaps so they can then go win competitions.
So one reason it is news is that it is effectively admitting that WHS is open to manipulation in a way that Congu wasn't.
It's difficult to say, isn't it? I mean, is it an admission of a problem with the system? It is certainly an attempt to rectify an anomaly that they have identified in the system. That's definitely true to say. I mean, I'm like a politician here, aren't I?
You are, yeah. I understand that you want to try and protect your sources. The interesting thing about it is that I guess that some people would say that the reason that WHS was ever rolled out in the first place was to try and solve problems of entry criteria for elite amateur events. So I think if we talk about the England Golf, England Golf's official event, so the Brabazon, for example, the English men's amateur, The Brabazon's not part of it.
No, it's not.
Okay, so the original intention of one of the original intentions of WHS was to try and level the playing field for entries to events that would attract an international field. So 15 years ago, when I was on the fringes of being able to get into things like the Brabazon, the Lytham Trophy, the English Amateur, the English Amateur is closed, but certainly in the other cases, they're open fields. So they often have large overseas entries, particularly Lytham Trophy, which I've never played in, but I have entered lots of times. And it was difficult for a scratch golfer or plus one golfer from this country to get into something like the Lytham Trophy, because the field was bunged up with people with world amateur golf ranking points and low handicaps because they were based on a different system. I don't think I'm showing anyone disrespect here, but if you were to look at the scores from those events, then I think you would find a direct correlation between some of the high numbers and some of the international entrants, because the handicaps weren't in line with the handicaps as we would know them. So WHS was rolled out to try and level the playing field for that. For at least one of the reasons was that particular point. So we're now 18 months into the system. 2 years into the system, rather, and we're now saying that in elite amateur events, which was a big reason that the system was rolled out in the first place, we're now saying that we've got a new problem where people are manipulating their handicap down in order to increase the chance of getting in the field. That in itself is sort of interesting, isn't it? So can you just explain how you would go about doing that? Like what is actually happening in reality?
It's difficult, isn't it, to sort of find concrete examples. I'm talking about how I might do it. If you're pushing me and say, how would you do it, Steve? Well, this is how I would do it. I would basically say, right, what handicap do I think I need to get into this competition? How oversubscribed do I think it would be? What general play scores am I going to need to shoot in order to lower my handicap to a level where I'm probably going to get into that competition? It's not unusual, is it, for extremely good players to hit low scores. It's not unusual for them when they're in form. You've done this yourself, Tom. You know, when you're in a really good vein of form, you can shoot 67, 67, 69, you know, in like rat-a-tat-tat, can't you? So, you know, it's not that. And I think that when we talk about world handicapping, we don't think about this. We think about the other thing. We think we're obsessed as club golfers with people putting in high scores to higher their handicap to win competitions. So this kind of other thing that we're talking about really doesn't come on the radar, does it, of much of us?
No, and we'll get to that in a minute. So I think what is unlikely. So what I don't think we're saying that people are in collaboration with one of their friends. I don't think we're saying they're just inventing scores to put in a low score. I think what we're saying is that players are picking and choosing what scores they submit in order to force their handicap down. So if they play 10 social rounds and two of them are in the 60s, they'll submit the ones in the 60s and they won't submit the ones in the 70s and the 80s.
Theoretically, that should be really difficult to do because you have to pre-register. So, you know, if you're using an app, you have to pre-register, and then there has to be a certain amount of time that passes between you pre-registering and putting in your score. And you can't do it away from, you know, especially, I mean, the MyEngland Golf app is GPS located. So, you know, if you're like in your house, for example, you can't just start putting a score in and it'll say you're not close to the clubhouse. You can't do it. But there are, because I'm on volunteer groups and I'm on enough WHS groups where I hear examples where people are able to do things like that. They are able to pick and choose what rounds that they play. So it obviously is possible, but it's supposed to be difficult.
Well, so it's obviously possible, otherwise it wouldn't be happening. We wouldn't have seen this change, would we? So let's just go back a step, I guess. Why wasn't this possible under the Congou system?
Well, I mean, it was, I suppose. I mean, there's no reason why you couldn't try and manipulate competition scores, could you? I'm sure there were people who in the past tried to do that, but the advent of the general play score makes it a lot easier. And you'll know this, Tom, because you are were a Cat 1 player, you know, under the old Congou system. You're a plus handicap golfer. So supplementary cards were unavailable to you, weren't they? Whereas now, a general play round, it doesn't matter if you play off 1 or 51. If you want to put a general play round in, you can. There's nothing to stop you. The whole point of WHS is to put as many cards in as possible to make your handicap as representative as possible, to give everyone the chance to have a handicap and maintain it and make it much easier to do so.
So what we're saying then is that the old system, obviously the big change is that if you are a Category 1 player, you couldn't submit a general play score anyway. So that kind of is kind of the whole thing's dead in the water in terms of trying to manipulate your handicap down to a degree, because you're just getting what you get on a competition day. It feels as well like the new system is more volatile. So moving in point ones, you have to play a lot of golf, don't you, to make a big difference at that level. So even if you were on a hot streak and you thought, right, I'm going to enter every competition going for a week, I'm going to try and get down as much as possible, which would be perfectly valid, it'd still take you a while to move, wouldn't it? On the old
system. You're a perfect example of this, aren't you? Because you can speak to this, because you had a very low score, didn't you, in your record last year, which made a very big difference to your handicap index and probably wouldn't have made the same sort of difference under Congou.
Did I, Steve?
Yeah, didn't you have that 67?
I had a couple of low scores. I had a very low score at the Hallamshire.
What I'm saying to you is that they like really made an impact and stayed there until they dropped off. And that kind of weighed your handicap down, didn't it, for quite a while?
I mean, it still is doing, yeah. My problem is I haven't played enough since. I'm going to get some dramatic changes coming up, which is exciting.
which speaks to the volatility you were talking about. And what I'm saying is, if you went out and put in 265s, say, your handicap index would go down significantly, wouldn't it?
It would, yeah. So are people, do you think people, just to stay on the Congo for a while, do you think people are looking back wistfully at Congo and thinking, can we please go back to the old system? Is that the sentiment?
Absolutely. Absolutely. People are, I mean, this always happens, doesn't it? But people are looking back with some very rose-tinted spectacles on about Congo. I remember Congo. There was plenty to complain about with Congo. I can bore all the listeners if you want to by going into some of those. But the idea that WHS is evil and Congo is some sort of perfect system was a complete fallacy.
Well, I think that is what people are here for, actually. So, if I'm thinking of the old system, there's this point about the kind of grind to try and protect point one, and we had the concept of the buffer zone. So your day was sort of, you kind of had a second bite. I always thought it being a successful day. So obviously you set out to win a competition or get your handicap cut, and once that was no longer on the cards, your next sort of target was, well, let's make sure I make the buffer zone. And for those with short memories, buffer zone was two over the competition standard scratch, or one over the competition standard scratch, rather, at category one.
I think it depended on how high you, what category you're in.
Yeah. So if you were kind of playing on a difficult day and you were thinking that the CSS might go up one and the buffer zone then gave you an extra shot, it gave you something to try and grind away at, to try and hang on to your onto that precious point one. Some people say, what a miserable existence if that's how you get your kicks, but it was trying to save point one was a big thing. I can remember missing 2 or 3 foot putts, knowing it's going to cost me buffer zone, and it's kind of like, it's all part of sport, isn't it?
I remember people who wouldn't enter the competitions towards the end of the season because they were off 0.4 and they didn't want to go to 0.5 and get an extra shot for the winter because they wanted to stay off their handicap. I'll tell you, one of my worst feelings in golf, Tom, was grafting all day on the old par 72 that I used to play in, shooting the 71, really grinding it out, thinking, fabulous, what a great day I've had under pressure, still managed to get an under par score. And then watching CSS drift down to 71 overnight and knowing that all of that work was for nothing, just stayed where I was. Awful. Honestly,
I mean,
I used to wake up the next day because or when you got the competition score and you just, I mean, I can't swear on this podcast, using the words that perhaps I'd like to, but it was really, really annoying, you know, especially if you were up against it, especially if you felt like you'd really achieved something during the day. Right, I've worked really hard for that 0.2 cut or whatever I'm going to get. Oh no, I'm not going to get it now because someone shot 64 and CSS has moved. Thank you very much. Now you can keep that. You can keep that all day long, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I mean, on to your point about hanging on to 0.4 or 1.4 or whatever, I've definitely done that. Like, in the early days of getting down to scratch, my ambition was to try and be able to enter the open qualifying, and the cutoff was 0.4. And I'm pretty sure that I've got to 0.4 in October, and then I've waited and stayed off that handicap so I could do my open entry for the next year to make sure that I qualified. I've 100% done that. I can remember an RNA official looking down his nose at me at panel one year when I'd gone up, I think, to one, and like, but I'd entered off 0.4, but now I was kind of on the other side of acceptable.
People are talking about the PCC like it's some terrible thing, and it obviously doesn't work properly, and everyone knows it doesn't work properly. But I mean, CSS had its own nightmares. I like Breeze and CSS would move, you know, up or down.
See, I read that in your pre-show notes, and I thought, I don't agree with that. So the PCC thing is this black box calculation, which I've got from you. So no one understands the algorithm, and the algorithm's not in public. I think CSS, it was complicated right enough, and obviously eventually it was calculated for you by a computer, which I guess puts it in a black box. But the workings of it were available before. It was done by software, it was done by hand, and there are charts that explain to you how CSS works. And I can't quite remember the nuance of it now, but it lower handicaps had a bigger impact on CSS moving, and then it was all to do with percentage of the field, but that was all tied to an algorithm of what the field's overall ability. And obviously we've all come off rounds of golf and moaned like stink about the CSS not going up or the CSS going down or whichever way round we wanted it to be to suit ourselves. But there was a clarity to it, I think. So the starting point of SSS was really clear, as in it was, it related to the same number as par. So if you had a par of 70, then the SSS would likely to be 69 or 71, or in some extreme cases, 73. So you sort of had some idea about what you were playing with before you went out. And then knowing that there was a limit to how far that would move. And you, I think if you played at the same place regularly, you get a really good idea about the conditions and what the impact of, would be on CSS. Now, what I do think is that, that amongst these elite amateur golfers that we're talking about, that also led to a form of handicap manipulation. And again, this is something I've done myself, that I know that if I went and played in the Goblet at Birkdale, and there's a competition at Hillside the day before, I used to know that the SSS for both those courses would be in the mid 70s and some way above the par of the course. And it, in all likelihood, as you say, with any kind of breeze, those would go to non-qualifiers, or the CSS would go to 78 on both days. So you effectively have a free hit for your handicap. So if you turned up and shot something in the region of 73 or 74, you were likely to get cut, and often with no risk of going up, because it was in very often it would be a non-qualifier. So I think that, I don't know what I'm saying about that. I'm saying that I think there was more clarity to Kongu, but it was still open to manipulation. All of that said, those things were still competition. So the frequency of them was hard to come by. You still had to go and shoot the score. Your card was still being marked by a stranger or a virtual stranger. So there was kind of perhaps more governance to it. I don't particularly look back on the old system and thinking, I wish we should go back there, but I'm someone who likes progress. And I think if it's been identified that the old system needs change and there's justifiable reason for that, then okay, let's try and change. I also don't think that you have to then say, well, that was the right thing to do, or the change we've made is perfect. I think you can then say, we need to adjust this and tweak that. I think that what we've ended up with is a system which is really, really, really down to people's integrity. And I think previously the system had some kind of, an inbuilt handbrake on that.
I think it was easier to find. I mean, like, supplementary scores were also, I think it's fair to say, abused at Kongu level. You know, I mean, everyone who's ever played golf had heard of a player off 0.4 also going the other way and putting the supplementary score in, and they would try their best, but if they got their 0.1 and they got another shot back for the weekend, happy days, right? But I think people who manipulated supplementary scores, it was easier to find them because supplementary scores were much rarer. I mean, you had to go in and say, I'm going to put in a supplementary score. Oh, all right, you have to pre-register now, but you can do it in an app. You know, there isn't an interaction anymore, is
there? There's a massive difference as well between putting something into an app and having to physically go in and give someone a scorecard and go, here is my supplementary score. Like, there's something more brazen about that, isn't there?
Yeah, I think it makes the whole things easier if you don't have to interact with somebody, definitely.
So Kongu wasn't perfect, but Kongu did perhaps protect the integrity of this stuff to a slightly higher degree. So to get back to the point, so England Golf have said, right, we're going to have to bring in an extra level of rigour to the fields that we're allowing to play in these events. And they are only saying when it's oversubscribed, aren't they? So they're really just trying to make sure the best golfers can get in the field, which is perfectly sensible. But what it does also bring into question is the system as a whole. So if they're saying, okay, so we recognise, which they are saying, I don't think we're putting words in their mouth, they are saying that we recognise the system is open to manipulation, and therefore we're going to make sure that where someone who hasn't manipulated the system might be impacted by that, we're going to look at the validity of some people's handicaps. So what therefore is the logical conclusion to draw about this at club level?
That there's manipulation going on there as well.
But that's quite a significant thing for golf to be saying about itself, isn't it?
Yeah, but in defence, I mean, I think that handicapping authorities have always been clear that no system is perfect, and that people, I mean, I used to have this conversation with Gemma Hunter, who's obviously now at the RNA in handicapping, but used to be England Golf's head of handicapping and course rating. And she used to say to me all the time, you know, you can't build a system to stop cheats. People who want to cheat will cheat. They will find a way to do it. And I do think there is something in that. And you talk about the responsibility on player integrity, and absolutely that's there. But it's not just there in handicapping, it's there in the rules as well. The whole of the sport is basically built upon people being honest.
Yeah. So I think two things about that. I'm going to deal with the less sticky one first. So, what has changed in the new world versus the old world is there's now increasing level, there's more levels of grey. So, under if you put the supplementary score piece to one side, because that didn't affect category one, and also it was relatively late to the party in terms of a thing, wasn't it? So I can't remember when they brought in supplementary scores. I'm going to guess at 2016 or something.
Yeah, you'll know more than me, but I mean, it certainly wasn't something I don't, I can't remember ever thinking about supplementary scores when I first started getting into competitive golf.
So, but it came in. It wasn't something when I was a kid. It didn't exist. It was something that arrived late in the day where you could submit a supplementary score, and it was to try and keep people's handicaps active because people were lapsing because they weren't playing competition golf to do with an aging population of golfers, that I guess. But a few things with that. So first of all, I don't think that really resonated with people at large. As in, I don't think people were all of a sudden running around doing supplementary scores. I think it was used by club administrators to say to Charles, who hasn't played any qualifiers all year, hey Charles, next time you go out and play, submit a supplementary because otherwise your handicap's going to go inactive. That's what it was for. So putting those things aside, in the olden days, it was really clear you were either playing with your mates and it wasn't affecting your handicap, or you were playing in a competition and it was affecting your handicap. Now, I understand right enough that in the old world there were sandbaggers, for want of a better expression, who would either avoid playing in competitions so their handicaps didn't go down until they wanted to play in one that they really wanted to win, which I guess is the sort of classic thing we understand to be a sandbagger. Or they'd often win the match play because they didn't play in loads of stroke play qualifiers. But that was pretty obvious because they weren't playing in loads of qualifiers and they were winning big pots. So they were easy to out on a social basis, as in at club level, people would say, bloody hell, Dave, there's no way you're 14. And there'd be an element of sort of tribe mentality about sort of outing those people, I guess. In the new world, I think people are probably doing this by accident because this comes back to this point where it's not clear whether you are supposed to submit all your scores or not. Some and the essence of WHS, and this is how it's administrated in the States, is that every score you put in counts towards your handicap. Now, that creates its own set of problems, which we can get into if you want, but at least it's clear. The expectation is if you're playing golf, you put in a score in, right?
So I've actually written about this in a piece that's not yet been published, and I've been umming and ahhing about it because it feels contradictory when you put it against the idea that's coming out of England Golf and what we're going to talk about in a couple of minutes about what clubs can do, to sort of mimic that policy that England Golf are doing. But I have felt now for some time that the only way that WHS is really going to work genuinely is if everybody puts every score in. It's what the system was designed for. WHS is essentially a legacy system, right, of the USGA course rating and slope, where you talk about, and you talk rightly, Tom, that in America, the culture of golf is unless you say beforehand, this score is not going to count, every score counts. So their entire culture of golf is built around that, whereas ours is the complete opposite. You know, we enjoy our competition golf and we take it seriously, but we also just want to have a knock. And social golf, where there's not the pressure of competition, is just as important as, you know, fighting for your handicap in a board comp. So you've got this complete, like, opposite end of the spectrum thing. And yet the system, I think, works at its best when it has frequent and regular inputs, when people, I mean, that's the whole point of it. You know, people were told all the time before WHS, put your scores in. Make sure you put as many scores in as possible so your WHS is accurate. Well, that's not a temporary thing. It needs to be done all the time. And now, so we've got this situation, I talk about this in my piece, which I'm now going to publish, obviously, because I'm talking about it. But I have this situation in my piece where I say, if you've got someone who's putting in general play scores all the time, and then they're not, I'm not suggesting they're cheating at all, but they're putting in frequent inputs to their handicap, so their handicap is accurate. Right, because the more inputs, the more accurate it gets. That's what we're told. I'm putting in a score. I've put in four scores in 6 months. So my handicap is not accurate, probably. It might be better, it might be worse, but it's certainly not where I'm at the moment. So the system starts to fracture because you've got people who are putting in scores all the time and people who aren't putting in scores in at all. And then everyone's like, he hasn't put any scores in and he's just gone and won a competition, so he must be cheating. So the only way, I feel, the only way around that is to say, right, everybody has to put every single score in, but GB and I golf will just not accept that. Can you imagine if the USGR or the RNA or England Golf or whoever is in charge of this says, right, from next April, every time you play golf, you're going to have to put your score in for handicap purposes. Honestly, there'd be uproar. Brilliant if you're a journalist writing about world handicapping, just watch the page views roll in, but not brilliant for the sport as a whole. So what are we left with? We're left with a system that feels to me to be imperfect. And the solution or my proposed solution to it, and I'm not saying I want to bring this in, I absolutely would not, but it's how I feel it would work better, will be intolerable to most people. You know, the sort of solution or the cure will be worse than the disease.
I've actually just thought of another impact on this, which I'll get onto in a minute. I think I agree with you. One solution is to say you have to submit every score, because to surmise what you just said, a system that is basically supposed to level the playing field has sort of done the opposite because of this interpretation or because of people using it in different ways. So some people, as you say, will submit every score and others won't, not because they're trying to protect anything, just because they don't have to, so they don't. And that is within their gift. The other way round of doing it, I would say, is that you just have WHS, but you go back to the old system and you say you have a distinction between qualifying rounds and non-qualifying rounds. What's stopping them doing that?
Well, I think clubs are doing that, aren't they? They do that in the winter. They're already doing that in the winter, aren't they? Because, you know, at my club at York, we have days that are qualifying and days that are non-qualifying because of the situation of the course. You know, maybe the course can't be played because of the too many winter greens, too far forward, perhaps. You know, I don't know the technicalities of
without wanting to sound contradictory. Sorry, without wanting to sound contradictory myself, that is contradictory. So the spirit of WHS is put as many scores as you can. Yet at club level, people are saying this one counts for your handicap, this one doesn't. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Well, I think they're using course conditions as the criteria for that. You know, I think if the course conditions are correct, then you would have everyone would be able to put a score in for handicap that day. But I mean, obviously,
they've made that decision because the course is shorter than normal, or there's a couple of temporary greens or whatever. But there's nothing stopping a golfer on that day saying, "I'm putting a card in."
Well, there would be if they deemed the course to be non-qualifying, because the people at the club would reject the score.
Well, even if it was submitted on the app, how on earth would they know that?
Yeah, because they can see the scores that are submitted on the app.
So they would reject the score on the basis on what basis?
On the basis that the criteria for the course being qualifying had not been met. I mean, this is well known in England. There's a whole piece on this in England Golf. I think we're getting slightly off the beaten track here, but there's a whole piece of that. There are situations where a course can be deemed to be not complying with handicapping, rules of handicapping, and so no score could count on that day.
Just give me a flavour of what that might be, temporary greens.
No, because I think temporary greens you can do. I can't remember, Tom, off the top of my head, but it is all publicly available. I'll link to the piece in the show notes.
Okay. So where does this, and where does this, this is the point I was thinking earlier, where does this leave the independent golfer? So by England Golf's own criteria, they're now saying that if an elite amateur event is oversubscribed, they're going to go and look at the entry criteria of people who have only submitted a certain number of competition rounds versus general play rounds. And if the discrepancy between the scores in the general play and the competition rounds is more than two, they're going to discount the general play scores. An independent golfer can only submit general play scores.
Yeah, but an independent golfer can't enter national competitions in England. They can in Scotland, but they can't in England.
Okay, which is fine, and that's news to me. But an independent golfer's handicap is supposed to be as valid as a club member's handicap, and the implication of what England Golf have done is that it isn't.
Yeah, you're way out of my pay grade here, Tom.
Why?
Because I'm having to think on my feet about the implications of that. But I mean, I think that
because it's just logic is what I'm saying. I'm saying that the logic that they've applied, which I'm not saying is incorrect, is that a competition round basically has more weight than a general play round, because they are either suggesting that the player is not submitting all general play scores, or they're suggesting that the player has submitted a general play score which is not accurate. So the extension of that logic is that general play scores are not as do not have as much integrity as a competition round. If you're an independent golfer, you are likely to be playing in more general play rounds than you are competition rounds by the nature of your the way you choose to take your golf. And therefore, England Golf are questioning their own system.
I don't think they are. I think you're bending it slightly there. I think what they're saying is that at elite level, there is an element of that to be the case. And what they want at elite level is they want more competitive scores from competitions of that kind of ilk to be the thing that determines entry into their top competitions. They're not saying, they're not discounting general player scores. They're not saying don't put in general player scores, far from it. But what they are saying is that we want the entrance to our elite competitions to have their handicaps built on competitive rather than social general play scores.
Okay, so I'll talk about a scenario that we're involved in. So we run something called the NCG Top 100 Tour. We're partnered with Independent Golfer. We welcome independent golfers with open arms. I think independent golfers made up about 7 or 8% of our the number of people who entered last year, and possibly a slightly lower percentage of the overall number of entries, because people entered more than once and they tended to be club members rather than independent golfers. However, independent golfer is quite a new thing, so quite a lot of the people who entered hadn't played a huge amount of qualifying rounds, and we all know that if you played a small number of qualifying rounds, then your handicap takes a while to settle down. We've introduced a rule that says that in order to win a prize, you have to have played in at least 20 qualifiers, I think it is. So there is some element of us saying we need to make sure you've got a valid handicap, just in terms of numbers of rounds you submitted. I would say the view amongst our entrants is that independent golfers' handicaps are inflated and that they're more open to manipulation. And there is definitely a difference in terms of how you're thought of if you've got a club handicap or if you've got an independent golfer handicap. And I would say that the change that England Golf have made at elite level speaks to that feeling at non-elite level.
I would certainly agree with you that this change that has been brought in is going to bring changes at club level as well. And at county level. I mean, England Golf have been very clear that this policy is not designed for club golf, but it's going to have an impact on club golf. It absolutely is, because club counties and some counties, looking at my Twitter messages, some counties have already started to bring in variants of this policy. And I think clubs will look to bring in some sort of variant of this policy as well, because they can now see action going on at the top level. Now you say, right, I'm at a golf club, how do I bring in a policy like that? I mean, clearly can I restrict the number of general play scores that players are submitting? Kind of goes against completely the ethos of WHS. So I don't think we'll see that. But I think what we might see is clubs start to say, if we've got a board competition or a big major competition, we may want to see X number of competitive scores in your handicap as opposed to general play scores. So, you might only be able to enter the club championship if 8 of your last 20 scores are competitive. I'm pulling those numbers out of thin air, right? Clubs could do whatever they want in regard to that. And this is, clubs are already doing a version of this, right? If you think about it, a lot of clubs are now using kind of the old active inactive handicap thing and saying, if you want to enter this competition, you need to have entered 3 acceptable scores over the last 12 months. And some clubs are actually saying, well, no, we want a few more than this. We want you to have entered 10 scores or 12 scores over the last 12 months to have this idea to stop the person who was barely ever playing and then going winning the match play, the example that you used earlier. And what I think we'll see is that clubs will develop that system and they'll expand it, and we'll start to see competitive scores take precedence, right? If you, as I said, if you've got the club championship, if you've got the Wilson Trophy or whatever it is, a big tournament that the club wants to kind of try and protect the integrity of, then they'll say, right, well, if you haven't played in X number of competitions up to this point, you won't be able to enter that tournament. It'll become part of terms and conditions.
At which point they will be absolute Armageddon.
Yeah.
I think the other challenge is open competitions, right? So what is the is the do you have any feeling about whether clubs are allowing independent golfer to enter their open comps?
I think it's up to individual clubs to decide whether they want to take that step. I know some have been very vocal in saying that they won't. I'd be surprised if there were some clubs that hadn't done that, where they were, welcoming independent golfers and wanting to, sort of increase their entries.
I think the open competition thing I think is interesting. I also think it's interesting that the point that you have made is that clubs can administrate this stuff however they see fit, as can organisers of open events or open event leagues as we run. But that's not very nanny state, is it? People like to be people like it to be clear. So what we're saying is it's not that clear. So you have to make your own judgment. And my point, in response to what you're saying about board comps at club level, it's all very well and good saying, oh yeah, Mr. Competition Secretary or Mr. General Manager of the golf club, for your big 36 holers where you want to make sure that the winner's not questioned, what we want you to do is we want you to have a look at the validity of handicaps of the entrants. Well, two things: who's got the time for that? And second thing is, how do you think that the senior that plays every Wednesday and he's decided to play in his one board competition of the year hasn't submitted any scores for his handicaps, which is just what he does, and then someone says, sorry, Trevor, you can't enter because we don't think your handicap's valid?
I mean, there's a couple of things to say about that. The first thing on checking validity of entries, that's just part of being in a handicap committee. It's just part of the job, right? It's part of the job. It is, and everyone who's in a handicap.
I'm pulling a funny face, which would indicate that I don't agree. Competition committees do not sit there and look at the field entries in the old world and say, well, what do we think about this field?
Well, they should.
What? Why? The whole point is that what? Why?
Because
A, people are supposed to have integrity. B.
you can't hide right behind WHS, and this is what I think some clubs are doing. They're saying that they're basically saying whenever there's a problem at their club, oh, it's WHS that's to blame. But as you said, there are things that clubs can do. You can't just it, the system isn't going anywhere, so you can't just blame WHS for all your ills. And this goes beyond checking validity of entries for open competitions. We do this. We do it on top 100 tour, don't we? If we've got a question mark, we will contact a club or we will contact a county.
We do it, Steve. And I think it's important. We do it where there's a whistleblower. So if someone rings up and says, oh, has Frank the Sandbagger entered your competition, he's known in our area for doing this sort of thing, then we'll look into it. And the other way we do it is after the fact. So if someone comes along and has 50 points, or if someone's won three or four events, or in fact, if someone is a winner full stop, actually be more accurate, we will check to make sure that their handicap is valid and then and all the rest of it. But we're not going through the entry list line by line to say, let's have a look at these scores and see if we can see pick any holes in it.
Maybe I need to clarify my position here. That's not what I'm. It's certainly not what I'm suggesting that you take every line. But I'm talking about more the player who puts a load of bad general player scores in and then suddenly wins a competition, right? I mean, like, you know, they've got a score that's completely out of kilter with the rest of their record. Well, I mean, it doesn't take Sherlock Holmes to deduce that something might be afoot there. And then whose responsibility is that to look at it? You know, is it the rest of the club, which is what frequently happens, to say, crikey, do you not know that X has been basically doing this for 6 weeks? And oh, look, now suddenly they've put their score in. You know, there has to be a handicap committee level, a system of finding out players that are putting these kind of rogue scores in. And they're there. It's in the competition system. You know, the software brings out reports that shows people who are in really bad form, who shows people who are like, you know, I think it's achieve against target or something like that, they call it. Shows people who are in, you know, particularly good form. It prints out numbers of people who use sort of exceptional scores. So, yeah, I apologize. I'm not suggesting that club committees look at 200 entrants every week and go through them with a fine tooth gun. But I am saying that they should use the handicap software that is available to them to try and weed out these kind of rogue scores. And you can't just say it's all WHS's fault. At some point, you have to sort of step in there and take some responsibility for it. And if you're not prepared to do that, I know this sounds like conflict. No one wants conflict, right? I don't. I'm a rules of golf referee, right? Occasionally, I'm always trying to help people, but occasionally I have to give a ruling that a player doesn't like, and they're not going to be happy about that. And I don't like doing it because I don't like making people cross. But at the end of the day, that is the position that I put myself into when I volunteered to be a rules official. Sometimes I have to tell people things they don't like. And I think that's got to be the same at club committee as well. This system is hard. Sometimes it is going to annoy people. You know, when you have a handicap review and you put someone's handicap up, they get upset about it, but you have to do it. That is part of the job. And if you don't like doing it, then maybe you should let someone else do it. I know that's difficult. Golf cannot get enough volunteers. I understand that. It's hard enough to get people on committees as it is. But do you understand? Maybe I'm not expressing myself very well.
No, you are. You are. I just think that it's a big thing to ask, to say. I think, like, we're all agreeing, I think everyone agrees that the new system is more open to manipulation. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. And England Golf have sort of said that themselves. They've said it by not saying it, to quote social media parlance. Tell me there's a problem with WHS without telling me there's a problem without WHS. That's what they've done. Anyway, so we're all agreed that the thing's more open to manipulation. Then to say, okay, yeah, that's fine. So people at club administrative level have to do something about that, or people organising tours. It's all fair enough. And like, people are grown-ups, and as you rightly say, it comes with the job. But if that problem's got worse because the system's changed, I don't think you can then shoot people for saying it's the system's fault, because the worsening of the problem is the system's fault.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that, but I would also say the system's not going anywhere.
No, right. So we've all got to get on with it. But I mean, that's like a Brexit argument.
You know, we've just got to come to terms with it, and we've got to accept it, ill or no ill. And you know, we go back to Congo, and this is where this idea is that Congo is some sort of like perfect system. It wasn't. And everyone knows the faults that Congo had, but people accepted it because it had been around for a long time and they'd learned to work within the boundaries and the deficits of that system. And eventually, I do think we have to remember that WHS is barely, not even 3 years old in the UK.
Okay.
And we're still in the real teething stages of this, and we're still discovering all the little foibles with it and problems with it. And perhaps, you know, we'll get solutions like this from England Golf, where Right, we've recognized this, and now we're going to sort of put a sticking plaster on this.
Yeah. So let's try and get out of the weeds and finish up on a sort of broader, more intellectual point, perhaps, or a sort of higher minded point. Is that like a lot of this comes down to like why do you play golf in the first place, right?
Yeah,
So
very much so.
you are.
Very much so, yeah. I mean, what we're talking about here, I think, and I said this earlier, didn't I, when I used the example of competition against social golf, what we're talking about here is like the very heart of the game, I think.
Yeah, but to start the point by saying something polemic. So I think that the arguments that we have and a lot of the problems in golf are caused by the handicap system existing in the first place. And the whole thing would be a lot better if there was no handicap system. And before you leap in, if I can just have a go at trying to express that in a slightly less polemic way, you're off your 11 handicap. Appreciate you're a better 11 handicap than me, than that, or whatever. You think you're a good 11, whatever. You're off 11. And my current index is plus one, which is equally nonsense either way around. And if we went and played golf, regardless of our form, let's say 9 times out of 10, I would beat you gross, right?
10 times out of 10.
No, not 10 times out of 10. The majority of the time, I would beat you gross. And on a net basis, you would beat me as many times as I beat you, probably. In fact, you probably beat me more times net, right?
Because I'm a good 11.
Because you're a good 11 and I'm a terrible plus one. But how much pleasure do you really take from that? Because like the handicap system has made you able to do that. You go back and it's like if I go and race against Kipchoge and he gives me a 4 hour head start to beat him in a marathon, and I beat him in a marathon, I'm not taking any pleasure from that, am I? But if I train and 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 I get within 1 hour 50 minutes of Kipchoge, I feel amazing because that's the best I can do. So I just don't, this whole the whole essence of the handicap system, people say, oh, it's great because you can play against people of differing abilities. Well, I would argue that it's terrible because it makes you compare yourself to other people. I have this constant argument with my kids all the time where they say, oh, so and so is better than me at this, or so and so is better than me at that, or I'm never going to be any good at the other. The whole point of stuff is to be as good as you can be at it. And the handicap system sort of does the opposite of that.
Yeah, maybe we'd be better playing against in competitions against people of our own level rather than.
If club competitions worked more on a league basis, I think that would be better, yeah.
You know, you'd have an idea that, you know, like you could easily split it up through divisions, couldn't you? All Cat ones play each other, all the Div twos play each other, all the Div threes play each other, all the Div fours play each other, and then you have promotion and relegation almost.
Correct. You play each other's stick end, and then for the next Saturday comp or the next time you play, you move up.
Or the reality is you move up as and how your handicap moves up and down.
Yeah, but your actual competition round is off stick end.
I mean, I personally think that would I would find that more enjoyable. I mean, I do agree that, you know, if I play against a very low handicapper and come out on top, I don't feel that I've beaten a low handicapper. It's just the handicap system has allowed me to compete on that basis on that particular day. And I think
But
I certainly feel the same
it's
against
amateur
Ty as well.
sport. It's amateur sport. So a 4 handicap is not going to beat a 16 handicap gross every week. And on the day the 16 handicap beats the 4 handicap gross, the 16 handicap is over the moon because it means something, because they've genuinely beaten someone who is on paper better than them.
We should expand our league system. I quite like it.
Yeah, I know, yeah. So I think the sort of point is that all systems are open to manipulation. The game like the game is supposed to be a game of integrity, isn't it? And I think the point I was going to make earlier, but I kind of thought I'd save it to the end, is that well, I think the thing that England Golf have done has basically sort of lifted the lid off that and said, actually, we recognise that people don't always operate with integrity, so we're going to have to do some integrity for them.
Yeah. Well, I think there is a statement in there. There's a quote that we read out earlier on in this pod that would very strongly suggest that, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
We are aware of some players' misuse of the WHS.
Right. What does Partridge say on that bombshell?
We're going to be away for a fortnight, aren't we? Because you're sunning yourself in Florida.
Yeah, I'm going to submit some general play scores, yeah. And but only the good ones, though.
You're going to go to a few courses where no one else can afford to play.
Exactly, yeah. So I'm going to go, yeah, I've got a very busy week of work next week. I had my hair cut yesterday, and when I left the hairdressers, having explained to him what I'm doing, he went, enjoy your holiday. So we're doing Sawgrass, then we're doing some Orlando kind of, it'll be more kind of resort golf, various places. I'm going to watch Orlando Magic play basketball on Monday night.
Sounds like a real holiday of a lifetime, Tom.
With Mark from JCB. And then we'll be locked in the convention centre on, Wednesday, Thursday. And then we're seeing Chris Paisley at Lake Nona for some, get some hashtag content.
Well, I'm going to BTME, Europe's largest turf exhibition. So if any listeners are going to be there, come and say hello.
Not to be underestimated, as I said to Jim Croxton, if there were no greenkeepers, there would be no golf, would there? So
it is an absolute truism.
It is an absolute truism. Right. Hope you enjoyed that. I think it got quite heated. I need a bit of a lie down. Please subscribe to our podcast channel. Please go and read stuff on Steve's stuff on WHS on nationalclubgolf.com if you haven't already. See you next time. Thank you, Steve.
Cheers, Tom.